The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
This episode's Beer of the Week is Shelton Brother Brewing Company Lump of Cold Dark Holiday Stout. Yet another bummed out holiday? Lump of Cold Dark Holiday Stout is liquid consolation. It's a deep, rich, sweetly rewarding stout to take the edge off of that grim family gathering, that cheerless annual festival of alienation. This brew is as dark as it gets, as black as the lump of coal you'll be getting for Christmas. Because let's face it, you've been pretty bad this year. And on this episode of MMA to the Max, myself and my co-host Joe are going to discuss what happened at UFC 218, the future of Jose Aldo, the future of champion Max Holloway, the future of Stipe Miocic defending his heavyweight championship against number one contender Francis Ngannou. Let's start the show.
Feel me, brother?
That's a damn good stout, actually, man. It's
a good one, dude.
I'm not that big of a fan of dark beers, but that is a damn good stout. That is a damn good tasting beer right there.
It is good, and my entry into beer was drinking with my older brother James and his friends. Them being older, they were drinking stout, so that's why I'm an IPA guy. This is where I started. My first beer was a fucking Guinness, dude. It wasn't no Natty Ice or Coors Light for me, but this is a taste of my childhood a little bit. It's a good, clean, sweet.
It's got a little bit of a blueberry taste to it.
What are the IBUs on it? It seems like it's got a decent percentage.
That's a good question, man. I know the alcohol content, 8% volume.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the IBUs on this bottle?
You know, they might not put it since it's not an IPA.
That's a good point.
But it's sweet.
That's a good point.
The proper amount of bitter to it. It's good beer.
Yeah, it's out of, what is it? It's out of
Maine?
MA, right? That's Maine, or is that Massachusetts? ME is Maine.
I think ME is Maine. Is Massachusetts, yeah.
Yeah, Shelton Brothers Brewing Company out of Belchertown, Massachusetts.
Belchertown.
I feel like that's fake. I'm going to have to look up a map.
I feel like that's the proper place for a brewery, though.
That's for damn sure.
Belchertown.
I like it. Anyways, welcome to episode number 21 of MMA to the Max. I am your host, Robert Taylor. I am sitting out here in beautiful Riverside, California with my co-host at his house, Joseph Hudson, a.k.a. Riverside Joe. Joe, how did you feel about tonight?
Tonight's fight card was phenomenal. I know I don't say that word very often, especially not when starting the show, but phenomenal is the night. The best way to talk about tonight's fights. Last night was a great show as well. A bunch of finishes, few decisions. All the fights on tonight's card were great. UFC's ending the year really, really strong. For fight fans and casuals alike.
Do they ever not, though? I mean,
they
usually
do that, right?
Yeah,
they do that.
They usually save everything, all the best for last. And Max Holloway even made a good point on a recent interview on UFC Unfiltered that this is the end of the year show compared to December 30th.
You know what? That's true. I think it takes a bit of a stab at Holly Holm and Cyborg, a touch. But I think that a fight with Jose Aldo as a headliner deserves to take that crown of the year ending, the Super Bowl of the year, because Jose Aldo is, always will be, as the promo we're saying, he's a legend. The man's, you know, we were talking about it a little bit before, and I'll let you delve into it more, but the man's legacy is still untarnished, in my mind. It's still untarnished.
Absolutely. And yeah, like you were talking about, we were talking about before, and I mentioned earlier, I picked Holloway. I like Holloway a lot. I don't mind that Holloway won, but I was rooting for Aldo to win because of the fact that this man, his legacy has taken so much damage because of that 1 13-second knockout loss to Conor, because most of the people that know him now know him because of the Conor fight, because of Conor McGregor. All these casual Connor fans that came in late to the game that don't know the Jose Aldo that we watched. You know, when we used to think his name was Jose Aldo.
Jose Aldo back in the WEC days.
Exactly. Joe Martinez called him Jose Aldo.
Speaking of Joe Martinez, last night, Joe Martinez announced the tough finale.
I love when Joe Martinez announces. I love that man so much.
Like, if you ride any penis, I think that's the one you prefer.
At least when it comes to announcers, which is like something you probably shouldn't be riding. Dick riding, but I love Joe Martinez, man. I would not mind if when Bruce Buffer retires, they say, Joe, come on in.
I hope he does, because whenever Bruce isn't there, it's Joe. He's their number two guy.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Buffer retires, Martinez would be great. Unfortunately, you can do, unfortunately, you can be an announcer for well into your 70s, you know, unless Buffer decides to stop jumping around.
Yeah, until the day he gets one of his groupies pregnant or something. Mm. I
mean. Well, he's been smart enough this long.
Yeah,
hats off to that one, buddy. Keep him prego free.
Yeah, I know, right, man. That guy's balling.
Yeah,
he's serious, but he earns it. He puts in so much work. He's mentioned it on a couple of shows before. He puts in so much work to what he does.
Oh, 100%.
Before every event, he's got flashcards. He's got the cards. He's studying. He's memorizing. He's researching.
He asks them, "How do you pronounce your name?" And he says it over and over again until he gets it right. And he double checks with them. No, the man is a workhorse. He's a beast. I've got nothing but love for Mr. Buffer. But I do like Joe Martinez. I like him. The nostalgia of going back to the WEC days.
I just find him more excitable.
Yeah, I think that's just because back then when you and I were talking about WEC, like nobody else but you and I knew what the WEC was. And
at least in our group, yeah.
Yeah, like and we had friends who followed the UFC who were a little bit more than casual, but they were just UFC fans, you know, like my brothers and my old roommate and all that. So in the WEC, you and I could talk about it, and then we hear Joe Martinez, it takes us back to that first kiss.
We were talking about people like Ben Rothwell and all that in IFL, and they're like, who?
Yeah, exactly. Talking about Ben Rothwell, talking about Jose Aldo, Uriah Faber, a huge name to come from WC. Cowboy Cerrone, Chael Sonnen,
and brought him in and all that.
And
started marketing a little more. Everybody started figuring out who these people were.
Yeah.
So it was great.
And bigger guys again, like I was saying, Sonnen, Stan. I mean, they had 85-pound weight division at WC, and that's where I learned of all these.
We watched the we watched the rise and the huge fall of Paulo Fio.
Yeah.
The man that unjustly robbed Chael Sonnen of becoming a champion.
When you take me back to some serious... I'm sitting in my bedroom back in my old place. I had my 42-inch TV, which was large at the time, in my room, my bedroom of all places, watching that fight. My roommates were asleep. And I'm like, what the fuck? Screaming and yelling. And next evening, I see my roommate Ryan, and he's like, dude, everything go okay in there last night? And I'm like, no.
Remember the first... fight Sonnen and Fio had where he got the armbar, and there was like sort of a phantom tap that Chael eventually became known for.
Yeah, right.
He's like, I didn't tap. They actually made a joke about it in Here Comes the Boom.
Yeah, I saw the tap.
He tapped,
I thought he tapped.
He claimed phantom. He tapped. He was beating Paulo's ass, and then got caught. Like, that's what Chael does.
What? He beat somebody's ass for four rounds in the fifth round? Well, there wasn't five-round championship fights back then, but in the last round, he gets caught? You're welcome, Anderson Silva.
Yeah, but, I mean, Jose Aldo, man, if you people don't have respect for Jose Aldo, then you don't have respect for the history and the sport of MMA, especially when it comes to the lighter weight divisions, the featherweight division. Uriah Faber put that division on the map. Jose Aldo took that power, that star power from Uriah Faber. I actually... You know, Faber, sure, he put it on the map, but I think Jose Aldo, at least through his WEC days, kind of, he brought it to a higher level.
He put a stamp on it. He was one of the smaller weight guys that proved what I've been saying all this podcast and most of my, you know, fandom of MMA is a smaller guy.
Footwork and distance?
What's that?
Footwork and distance?
No, not so much footwork and distance, which we'll end up talking about later tonight when the close versus... Tamor, I was thinking a couple weeks ago, fight. The lighter weight guys tend to be the better athlete guys. I have my theories on
Easily.
That. And he proved that he is a phenomenal athlete.
That flying double knee knockout to Cub Swanson.
That broke
two knees
heart,
in the
man.
Air was just a thing of beauty.
Yeah, that one.
Big
one
Cub
broke
fan,
my heart.
But oh God. That Aldo was the man.
Well, and that Aldo was the same guy. I mean, I know it was across the cage from Uriah Faber, but the first and only WEC pay-per-view. Headline, yes, Uriah sir. Faber versus Jose
and
Aldo.
And he was like, we are recording. There was no reason for you to set your alarm.
I mean, come on. We're in Southern
Seriously,
California.
We're only
here.
In
no
the backyard in.
In
some beautiful weather. It's actually pretty nice. I do have a jacket on, but it's...
Yeah.
No, no. What you're, yeah, for sure. But what you're saying, though, yeah, the only pay-per-view in WEC history, and it was pretty much the only fight they could have put on to headline that pay-per-view.
Yeah, and everyone knows Uriah, but mm-hmm. they couldn't have had that card without Jose.
And...
No other featherweight would have made that card worthwhile. Granted, he was the champion.
Well, then again, too, also, and then also, Uriah wouldn't have gone to the distance if it wasn't for Jose as well, because he was lenient on him.
I think he realized that he did permanent damage to his leg in that fight, bro. Like, honestly, God, that's one of
the
worst
same.
Fight injuries I've ever seen.
He was never the same after that.
You know, his injuries got a lot slower. I think he literally damaged some tendons and ligaments.
Possibly,
like no one's business.
But yeah,
man.
No, that was Aldo.
Yeah.
That is absolute dominant.
So here at the MMA to the Max, we are big Max Holloway fans. We're happy that you retained your belt.
Absolutely.
But we also love and appreciate everything Jose Aldo's done for the sport, the division, and the lighter weight guys.
And unlike a lot of people out there, I'm not ready to write him off yet. He might just need to move up to 155 where his weight cut won't be so much of a factor or an issue. Might help his cardio.
Yeah.
He'll be a lot faster than some of the other guys. Okay. I think that could do something for Aldo's career.
Well, let's play fantasy matchup. Jose Aldo at 55. Who do you put him against?
At 55?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's Jose Aldo.
Well,
so
he's got the legacy. He's got the name behind him.
You have to give him a ranked...
A top 10 guy, right?
You have to give him a top 10. Maybe okay. top 15. If we're gonna get real, you know, technical about it. But you have to... He has to be somebody that you can go on the UFC.com rankings list and actually... see his name there. That I mean, it's Jose Aldo. You got to do it. There's just no way around it. And if you look at the lightweight rankings, and if it was going to be somebody that you would kind of put Jose Aldo in his first lightweight defense, or sorry, not lightweight
first
defense,
lightweight
but lightweight fight.
Yeah. Who do you see?
I honestly, at this point, I would do the fight that we didn't get to see before that was booked at one point. Jose Aldo versus Anthony Pettis.
Anthony Pettis.
Yep. Ranked number 13. And I think that's the fight to make next for both guys.
I was going to go up a couple more and go with Ray Janal, Iaquinta.
That would be a great fight. That's the thing, though. I'm not sure if he's done in the UFC or not.
Stylistically, I think that's a winnable fight for Aldo, but it's also a test of a guy who's
a
good size,
guys,
a strong, big 55er. A strong big 55er, because that's going to be the test. You don't want to get him against a strong 55er like Poirier would be good, but Poirier's worked himself up in the ranking enough.
Yeah, and Poirier's dance card's already booked. He's got Eddie Alvarez next.
Yeah, exactly.
He might have to wait a little while because Alvarez is going to probably be out on medical suspension for a good while, about 6 months.
I think Chiesa would be good, but I just don't like that matchup. I don't think it'd be exciting. Benil at rank number 10, I think, would be good, or Al at 11. I really would like to see him against Al.
Yeah, well, Chiesa, I think at this point, even though he hasn't fought since, I think Michael Chiesa's next fight should be the Kevin Lee rematch.
I concur. Completely.
Yeah,
agree
just
with you on
get
that
out of the way and see what happens. See what happens when there's no controversy.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never seen anybody fight a rear naked choke with their hands at their chest. I've just never seen it. If that's a new technique, bro, dude, let's see it again. You know, let's see it happen.
I get what he was trying to say,
but I'm telling you right now, I can jump to the moon if I jump hard enough.
I was going to say, man, you know, Donald Cerrone would have been a good Aldo fight because he's moving back to lightweight division, but he's booked.
Yeah. You know what, though? Because he also mentioned, look, man, I'm not looking to try to fight these 20-year-old killers anymore. So he basically said, look, I'm done with my title run because you got to get through 20-year-old killers to get a title run. He just wants to have good, fun, exciting fights. But I think he would definitely outsize, big time outsize Jose Aldo.
For sure. And it's funny that Cerrone's talking about by. He's not taking a... He's not going to fight any killers anymore, but
no,
he's moving down to lightweight, and
which is full of what?
And he's going to fight a killer in this next fight that's being rumored.
What's the rumor?
I was just looking at it earlier.
What's the rumor then? Who's the killer he's going to fight?
What's the rumor, man? What's the rumor?
What's in the fucking rumor box? What's in the rumor box? So he's going to fight Poirier? No.
No. He's not ranked in the top 15. Oh, God. Oh, dang it. I'm going to try to find this article. Oh, there it is.
James Vick?
Mirabek Tysonov. 26-5. Man's on a freaking roll. The man is a beast. It is not a good fight for Cerrone in my mind. But we are digressing and getting off the point here.
Cerrone fight Brooks
Max
or
Holloway,
something,
dude.
But,
first defense dude. Of the featherweight championship. Looked damn good.
I'm not
going to say damn good. He looked good.
But he looked better than the first fight, and he finished him in the third round again.
He had some issues. It took him a little longer.
Yeah, but he still did it. But that's because Aldo stayed away longer than he did last time.
Yeah, but also his chin. You mentioned this earlier. His chin did carry. I know this part of the fight. Skill wise,
it does.
Skill wise, I don't think he looked as good in his last fight. Technique wise, his chin carried him to a victory here in a sense because a lot of the shots Aldo was landing on him would have put some other people away.
They would have. But you live by your chin, you die by your chin, because sooner or later, just like everything else, that gives way. That's what scares me about Holloway, because he does live on his chin. But
especially when he's trying to act like Cody Garbrandt out there.
I wasn't very
happy about that.
I didn't get what he was doing there. That seemed a little bit out of character. I know he's a brash kind of kid, you know, and I get
but
it.
He's always been respectful.
Yeah, which he was at the end of the fight and so on. In his post-fight interview, he was respectful to the champ. He still called him hey, Jose Aldo's a champion. You know, he paid his respects where due. I think that he had felt the power of Jose Aldo in the first fight and
he felt this fight too.
Yeah, but he knew that he could walk through it until you can't. I mean, we'll get into it later tonight, but you live by your chin. Sooner or later, your chin gives you out. It just does. I mean, we can go back to multiple fighters, but the first one that comes to mind right now is Chuck Liddell. That guy used to take punishment, walk through it while you're throwing a punch, clipping him, and he'd clip you just harder. And then that went away vis-a-vis Rashad Evans, who has decent power, but not with that kind of wicked power to put somebody away as hard as he did Liddell when they fought.
Yeah.
In 20,
I agree.
That was back in, 2006?
2005?
A long time ago.
Right.
But, yeah, it was a good fight. I think he lives by his chin a little bit too much. What I want to see from Holloway is he does use his distance. He's a much longer 45er. He uses his distance and his double jab really well, as you can tell by the right eye of Aldo. Started getting busted up in the first round. We debate why, you know, scar tissue over getting popped.
I definitely
popped.
Think it's scar tissue.
But it's both. I mean, it doesn't matter how much scar tissue you have.
Well, I'm not trying to take anything
popped.
Away from him, yeah, but I mean, it's definitely, in my mind, definitely scar tissue.
Yeah, but that double jab and using the distance, and I think he needs to employ a defensive technique called checking, kicks a little bit. Start to, you know, because he does has that wide karate stance, and so if he can start checking kicks a little bit more, and I really want to see him develop multiple entries for takedowns, not necessarily to control, not necessarily for submission attempts, but he doesn't threaten the takedown, like that's not an issue. I think if he can start to develop the threat of a takedown, we can start talking about him in the P4P list.
Yeah, It's funny you mentioned that, because he was supposed to originally fight Frankie Edgar,
yep.
who would have had that threat of the takedown and then some.
At 45, he's got the second best single leg takedown. First, in my mind, go to Chad Mendes.
Well,
it's debatable.
We'll see how
it's debatable.
Mendes, how he looks after coming back from his steroid suspension.
No. That was a eczema cream suspension. He had too much eczema cream. That's what he said, bro. And he didn't want to fight it past that. They're like, this is what you pop for.
And John Jones tested positive again because of tainted cocaine.
Well, that's actually more believable, to be honest with you, because we know.
That is, because the way Joe Rogan put it is like, wait a second. But
that's actually a logical explanation.
I'm not ready to anoint Max Holloway yet.
Nor am I, but I'm
until
ready.
Until he gets past Frankie Edgar.
I'm ready to think about it.
I'm thinking about it.
And even if he gets past Frankie Edgar, I don't know if I'm ready to anoint him, because it seems a little too one-dimensional for me to put him in the P4P list.
Well, I'm just talking about anointing him as the king of the featherweight division.
Oh,
he's
okay.
Still the champ.
Correct.
I mean, he's the champ, yeah, so technically he's the king.
If he gets through Edgar, he's beat everybody.
You got to beat Edgar. Aldo beat Edgar.
He did. Twice.
So, yeah, so you got to do the same thing. That, in my mind, then you're the king. Right. Absolute king.
He is the king of the featherweight, the king of all time, the featherweight goat in my mind, because he beat Aldo twice. He can beat Edgar. He's beat everybody else.
He's not the goat. I mean, I still think Aldo's the goat.
He's the he's got the title defenses.
He's the champ right now.
He's the top of the food chain in there now, because I think the Aldo era is done. Moved to 55, wherever. But
it was a great run.
The fight started out really, really well for Aldo. We were talking about it, like, we both picked Holloway. We both kind of wanted Holloway to win, but we were worried, you more so than me, about the Aldo legacy and the newbies.
Of course I was.
Not realizing
a lot of people just don't get it.
Who he is and what he's done. And he came out strong and powerful, but I think you bring it up more than I do.
As good as he did look, I can't help but think, like, he moved up his training camp two weeks.
And he's a big guy.
And he's a big guy. Right, he always has a bad weight cut. We saw the pictures from the weight, you know, from the weigh-ins.
But even when he's got a full weight camp.
But imagine how much better this fight could have been on a full camp. This Aldo, he looked like a hungry Aldo.
He did look like a hungry Aldo, yeah. And he looked like he was in good shape, good size, fit. But he gasses out in the fourth and fifth round, no matter what.
But maybe if he had a second full camp, if this was scheduled the whole time.
But his second fight against Mendez,
first three, and then maybe, you know,
maybe,
you never know.
Maybe his second fight against Mendez. That's exactly what it was. He won the first three, virtually KO'd Mendez at the end of the second round, and then he got his, I don't want to say beat up, but he got kind of pieced apart a bit in the last two rounds.
Coasting, yeah. He got.
Well, he coasted because he got no gas left. But you say it more than me, man. It'd be like you telling me about someone using footwork. Gas tank is a part of the game.
Oh no, absolutely, completely agree.
It's a part of the game.
You know what else is part of the game? And we alluded to this earlier. Is a chin.
Yeah.
And
live by the chin.
One person in the co-main event. Well, actually, I can't even say that, because we don't know if both of them don't have it, but we know one person doesn't have it, and Overeem doesn't have it. The whole narrative of, yeah, you were asking for the bottle opener.
Yeah,
I decided to open my own beer.
I saw that, you selfish prick.
Yeah, you like that?
I do.
There you go. Pass it along the table, across the table. Like I was saying, though, that was a good stout. We should have bought another bottle.
I know.
Oh, well, next time. Learning pains, growing pains.
Well, next time we buy two, it'll taste like shit, and we'll be stuck having
we're gonna
our full
go to a
22
different one.
Of our...
We'll go to a different one next time.
That's what I mean. We'll be stuck with a 22 of shit each.
I do like the holiday theme, since it is Christmas time. It is December. Just stick with holiday stouts, I'm thinking. Or just holiday drinks, whatever.
Look, we don't want to exclude our non-binary religious...
We made a promise to try to branch out from the IPAs.
We got a stout.
It's been 20 straight episodes of IPA, so.
Pretty much.
I think there was one Modelo and one 805.
Yeah.
So
one lager and one. I think 805 is still a lager. It's just a delicious lager.
It's really good. Oh, there is that keg at BevMo.
I know. Keg of Coors Light, dude. Take me back to friggin' junior high school. What grown man drinks Coors Light by choice? Good God,
I did
people.
Say in the intro that this is the... did I say it in the intro, or was I joking before the intro? I actually don't remember about the intro now.
In regard,
this is like the Stipe Miocic...
You didn't say that out loud. That's not on record yet, bro. Not on record
it
yet.
It is. So breaking news, in case anybody hasn't noticed, though. Stipe Miocic has agreed to a new position as the fire chief in Cleveland, Ohio.
That's a full-time gig that takes a lot
gig,
of time.
He's retiring from active competition, effective immediately.
I think
reports that he may have been watching UFC 218 before making this decision are unfounded and unconfirmed. So,
dude.
Yeah.
I think part of his contract is contingent upon Ngannou retiring before he returns.
Oh, my God.
Whew,
that man is a scary man.
Scary, scary human being. I've heard he's nothing but a pleasant human being as far as niceness, but I would not want to be locked inside a cage with that gentleman. That left hook.
That looping under hook. Coming around like
it was
an
like
uppercut.
It was almost like a shovel punch hook.
It was like a shovel punch,
but it was from the outside a little bit. Like a hook is up here, if you could see me.
It was like a shot out.
You know, and uppercut is in, a boxing uppercut is in
If he would have jumped in the air afterwards,
Yeah.
He would have looked like Ryu.
Yeah, but it was a little bit hookier than uppercutty. Like, a lot of MMA uppercuts are more like a shovel punch because you're going away from yourself.
No, it was a hook, but it was ooh,
but it was like an underhook. I don't know there's a name for it because you don't even have an opportunity to turn your punch over.
You remember in the movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit, whenever the weasels would die, they're like their soul would leave their body. I think I saw Overeem's soul leave his body on that shot.
You know, if anyone can steal Overeem's soul, it would be Ngannou.
And he's going to steal Stipe. I'm going on record. That is the next heavyweight champion of the world right there.
I'm going on record right now. I think Stipe is a phenomenal human being, a fighter I love to watch. But I just watched the guy that is the best heavyweight fighter, the best heavyweight puncher. I don't want to say fighter.
Are you talking about Overeem? He's the most technical striker in the heavyweight division.
The most decorated.
Decorated
striker
and one of the best in the clinch.
Oh, yeah.
And he had the game plan to go in there and clinch with him, and it looked like he was going to try to clinch
and Ngannou was letting
and take him down, and Ngannou overpowered him
and he let him clinch.
And after that,
I
don't think Overeem knew what the hell to do.
No, when he got caught in a momentary lapse of reason and decided I'm going to brawl with him for a brawl 1-2-3. But when he tried to back out, you know, he tried to come out. He didn't have his hand up, which is fine because he threw that punch.
Well, he thought he was going to use the same game plan for a while there that he used against Junior Dos Santos and Mark Hunt. But the problem is Junior Dos Santos and Mark Hunt are shells of their former selves when Overeem fought them.
Correct.
And Francis Ngannou is a young, strong, hungry, scary beast of a human. And he absolutely murked Alistair Overeem. And Alistair Overeem, who's won 6 of his last 7, his only loss was to the champ that he almost finished. And if he went for ground and pound instead of going for a guillotine, ill-advised,
he might have had
the
belt.
Champion right now.
Well, not now.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's true. Oh, my God, that is a scary man. And I feel so bad for Stipe. And I'm going to go on record and say I give Stipe Miocic 0 chance in this fight.
I was just thinking about this right now. Heavyweights get paid the most in the UFC per fight. And I'm kind of thinking, well, why is that? You know, why are they the draw? I guess because people are amused by the size.
Everybody's
so
always
draw.
Been interested in heavyweights. You go to boxing, you go to pro wrestling, the bigger guys always
100%. And yeah. I get that, but I'm just thinking, like, why? And it just dawned on me. Because if you want me to fight Jose Aldo, who will beat the brakes off me in a heartbeat, right? You could pay me $100K and I'd call it a day, no problem. You know, I'll get the shit. I'll probably get knocked out. I'll get hurt. You want me to step in the octagon across from Ngannou? I need $10 million because I don't know if I'm going to walk again. You know what I mean?
Dude,
like, that's
Overeem
why they get paid so much, because those big, heavy-handed
Overeem was
like
on the ground for a while, and then he was up on the stool not knowing where the hell he was. He was probably sitting there getting ready for a spelling bee from third grade or something.
Dude,
he was out.
For those of us who have been concussed and knocked out, during my high school football career where I scored 4 touchdowns in a single... No, I did have a high school football career, which was unmarked.
I was going to say for Polkai.
At best.
Yeah.
At Polk High. I've been concussed on a number of occasions because I learned from my older brother, you hit people with your head because that's how you hurt them the most, which is true if you hit them right. But in long story short, you pop back up, you don't remember a lot of shit. You know, I remember I got a concussion in the fifth play of the game. Fourth play of the game. Kickoff. And then 3 plays later, I got concussed before 4th down. And all I remember was walking out of the locker rooms towards the field. For us, where we played, it was in a locker room. It was actually like a trailer. Walking out from the trailer to the field, talking to Mr. Jeff Weirich about how excited I was to be playing and ready to go for this game. It was against Norco High, which is where my son will end up going. And just thinking about that. And the next thing you know, I'm on the sideline talking to somebody. And when I saw Overeem today, I know it's a very long story for no reason, and I promise you, Robert and I have been responsible in our lack of drinking tonight. But when I saw that look on Overeem's face today when he congratulated Ngannou at the end of the fight, I knew exactly what had happened. He didn't remember any of the fight.
He didn't remember. He lost.
He remembers being inside the locker room warming up, and then he's on the bench. Like, whoa, what do you mean? What happened? What do you mean? What? I lost? And, you know, his brain's comprehending it. He seemed to recover okay once he realized what had happened. Fuck, I got knocked out. But he will never remember that punch. He can watch it 1,000 times, and his brain
He won't remember it, but he's going to see it, that's for sure, because it's going to be on highlight reels for years. And
sorry, my attention got...
I was like, what are you looking at, man?
I don't know, someone's changing channels. It must be Gracie or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she... If there's apps on the TV, the little one will find them.
They do. They do that. Even my three-year-old, he knows how to work my phone better than I do.
My buddy Nick, he has a Plex account where he has a server on Plex with all these movies. He had to make a separate kid account that only... For myself, that only she can... access, because
that makes sense.
Yeah, so because she knows how to access. I didn't even give her my password, none of that stuff. She just figured it out.
They do that.
Yeah, seriously. So Henry Cejudo just in my mind cemented the next title shot at the flyweight championship at Mighty Mouse behind TJ Dillashaw, obviously.
Correct.
If that fight doesn't go down though, then Henry Cejudo just cemented his second shot. And although I won't pick him, because I will never pick against Mighty Mouse, I think he's got a better Mighty chance Mouse than he did TJ. Last time.
Yes, but yeah, I will never pick against Mighty Mouse against another 25er other than TJ if TJ goes to 25, which in my mind, that fight doesn't happen at 25, but that's a side note. I think
it shouldn't,
because
if anybody's going to win two titles at the same time after Conor did it, Mighty Mouse is
Mighty
the one
Mouse deserves it. Yep. Yeah. We're on the same page there. As impressed as I was with Cejudo last fight with what he did to Wilson Hayes, I was just as, I'll be honest, unimpressed in what he did with Pettis. He took Pettis down easily.
He controlled Pettis the
he
entire
took Pettis
fight
down easily, and he controlled
dominated
him.
Pettis.
And he went to side control. But he didn't do anything to really finish the fight from top position.
Well, I think that's taken too much away from Pettis, who, Pettis and other Duke Rufus fighters have shown, they have a really good ground game.
They have a very sound guard game. Anthony Pettis showed a very, very sound guard game in his last fight against Dustin Poirier. Very sound, very technical when it comes to like the ABCs of it all. Very good. Throwing up submission attempts. Nothing spectacular. Like, oh my God, I've never seen that. Great. And Sergio, the same thing. But when you're in side control, you're not going to ground and pound somebody. You're going to move for submissions. You're going to move for mount. I saw none of that from Cejudo. None. He simply tried to keep Pettis down on his back and John Finch him a bit. That's what he did.
I still think that has more to do with Pettis than it does with Cejudo doing his thing.
No, I'm not going to disagree with you, but I thought he was a world beater after that last fight against Wilson Hayes. I'm still on board the Cejudo train.
I still think he's the second best flyweight in the world.
I want to see him fight.
The controversial loss to Benavidez aside.
I want to see him fight Benavidez one more time.
Well, if Benavidez ever fights again, he's been injured for a strong while. But I think if the TJ fight falls through, which I hope it doesn't, then Cejudo's next. I mean,
there's nobody else at 25. But I think right now, Cejudo fights Benavidez for an interim belt while Demetrius goes up to 35 and does what he can against TJ and maybe plays there for a touch then comes back down.
If Cejudo wants to take another fight, if Mighty Mouse versus TJ gets booked, I know of a certain flyweight champion that is UFC ready.
Well, once again, our good friend and multiple-time guest on the show got called up at the wrong goddamn time.
Yeah. Earlier today, we saw from Jose Shorty Torres that he was called about a fight with Tim Elliott. It was unfortunately, he was still healing from his last fight. So
he took on a
much bigger guy, bantamweight. So this would have been a flyweight fight. No, it might have been a bantamweight because I think Tim Elliott's
not moving to bantamweight. I know he's a big feather. Okay, maybe. I know he's talked about it because he doesn't like the weight cut.
Short notice that might have been. Either way, I guess Shorty Torres talked about he was being offered that fight. Unfortunately, he was still healing, and the man has the worst luck when it comes to timing.
The thing is the obvious thing is that the UFC wants Shorty. He is the number one prospect in MMA. Yeah. He is. You look at Flow Grappling.
Yeah, France is not. I'm sorry, anybody that actually thinks that he is.
No, he's not bad. He's a great fighter. It'd be great to see him in the UFC, but he's not the number one prospect. He's not. It's Jose Shorty Torres by a long shot. Just watch him fight a much bigger guy in De Jesus, and he, you know, again, Shorty's got a great chin. He lived on his chin a little bit on that fight. But he was at towards the end of the fight, he was outpowering him, outstrengthening him, and that's how he got the choke out. He got the choke out submission in the fourth round against a fifth round against a bigger, stronger, and surprisingly not faster, but fast bantamweight.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
He is the best unsigned to the UFC fighter in all of MMA. And if you disagree with me, email me directly, find my phone number and call me, interrupt me at work, and I will debate you till the fucking end of time that you're wrong. Long story short, enough Shorty praise.
We do it every episode almost.
Yeah, well, we're big fans. We're dick riders. The great thing about that was we were fans of Shorty before we ever started this podcast, so that kind of helped us.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome when he agreed to come on the show.
Yeah, we were somewhat awestruck by it.
Speaking of being awestruck, though, great use of that word to segue into this next.
It's what I do, man. I'm Captain Segway. I'm Segway.
One of the two Fight of the Night awards given out tonight. They forewent the usual Performance of the Night bonuses for us. Singular performances for the fighters, and rightfully in my mind, very rightfully in a lot of people's mind, gave out two Fight of the Night bonuses tonight.
Yes, sir.
Eddie Alvarez defeating Justin Gaethje by third round TKO. I know Bruce Buffer announced as KO, but in the record books they have it listed as TKO.
It should be TKO.
Yancy Medeiros defeating Alex Oliveira by TKO. Both fights, ending in the third round, and holy shit, I don't even know which one I liked more.
Dude, let's go down to the Oliveira fight.
We had a lot of say about this one.
We talked about it last week. Both Robert and I picked Oliveira, and it's not for a lack of
against our hearts.
Yeah, it's not for a lack of love for Medeiros or for love for Oliveira. It's for Oliveira is a big guy. He's more tested. We didn't think Medeiros would be able to stand in there and hang with the power,
but
the strength.
But we did not enjoy picking him.
No, it was, and honestly, I've been vocal on this show since the Will Brooks fight. I'm not a fan of Cowboy Oliveira. I didn't like his antics against Brooks. I didn't like him missing weight and then talking shit after he beat a guy.
He was very unprofessional.
I didn't like that, and I haven't picked him simply on the fact of not liking him. But him against Yancy just seemed like it was too big of a test for Medeiros, Yancy Medeiros at this time. Yeah. So I picked against him.
And not to mention the fact that Alex Oliveira was coming into his own. He was actually on a nice win streak. He had that no contest against Tim Means and came back in the rematch and flattened him. He flattened...
did I say Charles Oliveira earlier?
Hey, you might have. But he flattened... His last fight. He was getting dominated in the first round.
On the ground. My brain is freezing.
And then the guy jumped in. He caught him with the shot that put him out. It was Ryan LaFleur.
There you go.
Whose only loss in the UFC or professionally at all at that time was to Damian Maia.
Yeah, Ryan LaFleur was looking so good.
He was looking good, and then he waited in and got caught and knocked clean out. It was a beautiful counter. I gave him so much credit for that, even though I picked Ryan LaFleur.
Yeah.
And I picked Oliveira in this fight. And you know what? I'm not mad. And we were talking about it earlier.
Not at all.
We have so much more respect for Alex Oliveira.
My hate for Oliveira has since disappeared simply due to the fact, not just him fighting. And I used to like him before the Will Brooks fight. The sportsmanship he showed throughout the fight and at the end. The love and respect he showed back to Oliveira was genuine.
Yeah.
Because after the Will Brooks bullshit went down, his fight against Tim Means, the first fight against Tim Means, it was like it ended on him getting illegally kneed by Tim Means. But it seemed like that whole fight he was just trying to be over respectful and like trying to win people back. It seemed disingenuous. The second fight against Tim Means, it seemed the same thing. It wasn't real. I didn't like it. Ryan LaFleur seemed a little bit more like himself again. Still didn't pick him because I wasn't happy with him.
And because Ryan LaFleur was actually really good.
And because Ryan LaFleur only loss was to the world's greatest MMA submission artist at the time. You know, no one better than Damian Maia at the time. So you're like, okay, Ryan LaFleur lost to this guy. So it really boiled down to more me not liking Charles Oliveira. But long story short.
Alex.
I do like Charles.
It's okay.
Alex. And they're on the same card tonight, so my brain is twisted on that one.
Dan Hardy? I'm going to start calling you Dan Hardy. He was doing the same thing the other day with Alex Garcia and last week and Alex Caceres. Calling Alex Caceres Alex Garcia.
It's funny. We maintained our drinking this night, but I feel like I'm rambling like a son of a gun today.
No, it's okay. No, we're new.
But no, so I wasn't a big fan of his, and I was kind of put off by him. But tonight it showed as true sportsman.
And it was a great fucking fight.
The Cowboy Oliveira that I started to like way back when it was before Cowboy versus Cowboy fight. So he's coming around. Let's see who his next fight is. I may or may not pick him, but my hate for him is gone. I think it was just a bad show of character in one moment against Will Brooks. And yeah. I held it against him a little too long. I think it was a bad moment. We all have it.
No, I did too, very impressed with him tonight.
Hats off to him.
Very impressed with Yancy Medeiros.
And Medeiros.
Both those guys, great fight.
Medeiros
Eddie Alvarez became the first person to beat Justin Gaethje. And cemented, in my mind, his place as not the top contender, but a top contender still.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, he's another person that, like Jose Aldo, gets a lot of hate because of the Conor fans.
Yeah, but what? Because he's the Conor, underground king for a reason. Yeah. If
but,
you don't
but they
understand
don't know
that, man,
where Eddie
look
Alvarez
it up.
Came from, man. They don't want to.
Everybody's got
those,
fucking
those
Google.
Fans, those fans that hate Eddie Alvarez hate him because of Conor McGregor.
They hate him because they're Irish or they wish they were. Because other than that, it makes no sense. Yeah.
I mean, the man's been in so many wars in his career, and he was in another war tonight for our enjoyment, and he came out on top, and he looked great. He looked smart.
And he's been nothing but respectful to every fighter, every time. He's a true martial artist in that aspect, man.
He looks smart, but at the same time, I can't help but think that Gaethje had a lot of missed opportunities with the leg kicks that could have probably put him down and finished him.
We agree to that, but we talked about this before. What do you need to do to beat Gaethje? We talked about, look, go for the, you know, you got to take him down maybe, you got to grapple him, you got to do this, you got to do that. What? Did Alvarez do that nobody else has done?
Went to the body.
He showed a chink in the armor. When you watch Gaethje fight, he's an inside brawler. He puts his guard up high. Yep. He has a phenomenal chin, which was tested umpteenth time tonight until he got dropped by that last one.
That last knee, yeah.
His hands are up. He's got that guard up. Work the body. Get him to lower his hands. Get him to drop his guard. Get him to shoot for takedowns. Get him to be uncomfortable. And Eddie Alvarez tonight that looked like Eddie Alvarez I've never seen physique-wise came to play, and he brought in a game plan. He said in his post-fight interview that his sparring partners, he needed them to come at him like Gaethje did, and he saw that the body was open.
It worked.
And he was digging. Those were like Rocky type body shots where digging.
When he was digging into Apollo and other things. Yeah. He was digging into Drago.
Drago in particular. B.A. Baracus.
That's not his name in the movies.
Oh,
but,
God, I can't remember. Mr. T's name in that movie.
Yeah. My prediction? Pain.
It's gonna ache me all night. But
sure
he was
I'll
digging
into
those body shots. Lovely, beautiful, and I hope that he didn't just write the playbook to beating Gaethje, because I don't want him to lose anymore. I love watching him fight. I mistakenly picked Michael Johnson against him because I just thought strength of schedule.
Clubber Lane.
Johnson, yeah, Clubber Lane, there it is.
Prediction pain.
I figured Michael Johnson's strength of schedule would be able to withstand the desire to brawl with Gaethje because that's how he wins, but obviously that didn't work out. Michael Johnson got KO'd, but...
Yeah, I do think that Eddie Alvarez might have just shown the blueprint to beating Gaethje. Sure, Gaethje can take shots. He could take a ton of punishment and still survive. But body shots are going to slow him down and keep his power down and keep him from being able to just swarm you like he did to Johnson.
Yep.
And I could see that being a big downfall.
Gaethje is a legit world-class amateur wrestler. NCAA, sorry, not world class, and they're legit
NCAA Division I All American.
Division I All American. He needs to turn his leg kicks into takedown entries to get his opponents to drop their hands.
Yeah,
because all you're really worried about with him is the leg kick, and even though he chewed up Alvarez's legs.
We appreciate your style because you put it on an entertaining style for us fans. But you got to win, man.
In my mind, you use those leg kicks and you use the your guard and your hooks as entries to takedowns. Take them down, pop them a couple times, and get back up because the threat of a takedown will lower their hands and slow them down. And now you don't just have the feints with the punches. You now got the feints with the level change. You get the level change in. That opens up the uppercut. That opens up his body shots. It's going to open up a lot more. He is a phenomenal wrestler. He went for two sloppy kind of iffy takedown attempts against against Alvarez tonight.
I think
out of being fatigued.
Yeah.
But because he has the capability to get you down. If he can learn how to transition the combination leg kick to a power double, that's gonna that one thing will elevate him to that UFC level, that UFC caliber top five fighter where he belongs.
No, I agree.
This is just my opinion on what I think he should do.
No, I think that's actually a great point. So Eddie Alvarez pretty much has his next his dance card punched for his next fight with Dustin Poirier. Dustin Poirier's last fight called and said, demanded, I'm getting the winner. If Nate Diaz is looking for that one fight that's going to be super exciting and get people watching, Justin Gaethje
is
versus
it.
Versus Nate Diaz. That would be fireworks. I'm all about that fight. In the main card's opener, Tisha Torres, in my mind, absolutely... I'm not gonna say dominated, but absolutely dominated at least the first and the third.
Yeah, she outclassed.
She clearly won, and that's has a lot to do with the fact that she is a lot stronger. Michelle Watterson is a natural atom weight. That's 105 pounds.
She's not natural anymore. She's put on an extra 2 pounds.
She's
of muscle.
Still an atom weight. She's totally an atom weight.
I was told via Joe Rogan and John Anik that she put on 2 pounds of muscle.
She's an atom weight. Tisha Torres, unfortunately, she still only has one finish in her entire career. That was her last fight against Juliana Lima.
Yeah, well, and, who doesn't finish Juliana Lima?
Right.
I mean, come on.
So I don't think this punches her ticket to a... a title fight with Rose, which would be a trilogy fight, that's for sure.
It does not, and Rose
beat... There is a story behind it, but unfortunately it's just not happening because Rose is getting an immediate rematch.
As she should, and Rose beats this version of Tisha Torres.
Possibly. I still think Tisha won that
Rose's,
last fight.
Rose's jiu-jitsu and back game
Tisha should be 2-0.
And sweeps are better than Michelle Watterson's.
I still think Tisha should be 2-0.
Michelle was able to sweep. Michelle was able to work a little bit and not get ground and pounded. I think this version of Rose is only 80-75% of what we're going to see out of Rose. I think she has finally found who she is. See, part of being a fighter isn't just about finding your jab, finding your hook, finding your, like I was talking about with Gaethje, your entries to a takedown. Part of being a fighter is finding out who you are. There's nothing more stripping of the person, more stripping you down to the bare senses of your existence than fighting. I think Rose finally found who she is. When she stood there against the most feared fighter in her weight class, one of the most feared fighters in female MMA, Joanna Jędrzejczyk was a force to be reckoned with, and she stood right in front of her and looked her in the eye and said, I'm not afraid of you. That girl, that woman...
I still think that has more to do with styles make fights. Personally, I think that styles make fights. So, but we will see. We will see. I don't know. I think
Rose is the stoic fights, Rose the stoic warrior. That's who she is. She's not Thug Rose. She's not a thug. She's not that brash thuggish character. I get Thug Rose. It's a sweet little name. She's not a Thug Rose.
Fair.
I don't know. I don't know any of the Stoics by name. I'm just somewhat familiar with the philosophy to 0 degrees. Whatever one of the Stoic philosophers' names are, that's who she is. Rose, the woman reciting the Lord's Prayer as Ioana's spouting
awesome.
Off to her. That's fucking scary. That's Rose. Nobody beats that Rose. Tisha Torres, Michelle Watterson. Joanna Jędrzejczyk the second time around. It goes the distance, but she doesn't win because...
Well, we will see. Hopefully the reffing in that fight is better than some of the reffing in tonight's fights. More specifically, David Taymor and Dracar Close. While a very good, entertaining fight, Herb Dean, fresh off of his early stoppage with Al-Hassan versus Hamasi, earlier, which we agreed that we can see why he stopped it just from his vantage angle, point. It looked like Hamasi kind of went limp and dropped.
And he may have. He may have recovered the second his booty hit
don't
the ground.
We don't know. But I mean, it's not fair, but it's understandable.
I'm not going to fault Herb Dean for that action tonight.
But I will fault him for threatening to take a point away from David Taymor because of Jakar Close just standing there with his hands down while David Taymor was circling around and resetting. He kept calling it backing up. He's going to take a point away from him if he keeps backing up. Where I come from, what David Taymor was doing was called circling and resetting, taking the center of the octagon. Apparently in Herb Dean's mind, because he was letting Jakar Close dictate what the referee did in that fight, it was called backing up.
Yeah, it was he was managing the distance. He was using footwork.
Head movement, you know, stuff like that.
Head movement, iffy. The best head movement of the night.
Head movement. Oh, come on. Head movement.
We're not even going to say what that's about, but if you know, you're
if you don't
fucking
know what that's
laughing.
About, you shouldn't be listening.
You're laughing. Yeah, there's no casuals listening to this show. You know exactly what the fuck we're talking about. The worst coach in all of MMA.
Head movement.
And the luckiest coach in all of MMA. Am I supposed to move my head when I'm punched before I see it coming?
Herb Dean had an off night tonight, and that's really sad. So
he did. But our friend, your friend, the one I unfortunately, and I apologize.
Bobby Wambacher.
Bobby, I was unable to attend.
Great job tonight.
Yeah.
Hey.
He did everything right.
Great job. He got the ref Dominic Reyes, local Hesperia boy.
Yeah.
Absolutely dominating Jeremy Kimball. For his second UFC fight,
submission win. I had him TKO the first round.
He's a jack of all trades. What can we say, man? He comes from Joe Stevenson's area, Joe Stevenson's gym, Cobra Kai.
That's right,
Victorville, California, Hesperia, High Desert.
I knew his wrestling was good, but his jiu-jitsu, his submission, hats off.
Yeah, he's good, and he's good. And he also got to do Felice Herrigan, Courtney Casey, which was also a really good fight between two top 15 women's strawweight fighters. So, hey, you know what? It's really crazy. I was just talking to Bobby Wambacher about some of the best referees. He was naming Herb Dean.
Yeah, he is one of the best referees.
He is, but it's kind of ironic that the very next event, Wambacher was perfect in his execution of what a ref should do, and Herb Dean had a couple of issues.
That knee to the dick shot he caught on the spot.
Yeah.
Broke him up, gave him time to recover. Excuse me. And he was the referee for one of the fights of the night there with Medeiros versus Oliveira.
Great fight,
And Oliveira kneed Medeiros right in the dick. It was obvious, but the thing that I'm going to talk about with Wambacher was he was in the right position. You know, and it's tough, though, because when you got guys against the cage and they're grappling for overs and unders, are you to the right of them, to the left of them? If Wambacher would have been to Oliveira's left, he might not have seen that was a knee to the dick. Sometimes it's a game of chance, but he saw it. You can see his reaction was like, whoa, when he came in there, gave Medeiros the opportunity to recover.
For sure.
Medeiros took as little time as possible because he knew he had Oliveira hurt.
He knew he had him hurt.
That was second round.
He couldn't take the 5 minutes.
Yeah, he didn't want to take it. He wanted to get back in there. It was a smart decision on his part, but Wambacher right there every step of the way. He had a good night tonight as an official, as a referee.
Sure.
Good
job. He's a great guy, too, man. He's a good guy. So I'm glad he got to officiate it. Yeah. You look like you're doing the happy dance here, man.
Yeah, I think that we might need to take a small break. I need to piss out of my fat dick real quick, and we'll be back before you know
it. We'll take a quick 30-second commercial break to shout out to one of our affiliated podcasts there, Football to the Max. So we'll be back.
Boom. Enjoy.
It's game time, boys, and we know football. Football the Max is the podcast for you if you want in-depth analysis over the NFL and college football. We preview all the action coming your way over the weekend. And we break down all the big action after it's happened. Plus, we tackle all the big news topics and discuss everything when it comes to the gridiron. So come check out Football to the Max every Tuesday morning and Friday morning on the W2M Network.
I want to talk about.
What do you want to talk about?
Swanson Ortega. I want to talk about this for more than just a couple seconds.
No, we got time. I was about to say, We're back from commercial, but
commercial slash Joe has the bladder of a thimble. I don't know.
So yeah, no. Next week, next Saturday, the UFC is back in Northern California.
Central.
Is it Central? Wait, where are they at?
Fresno.
Fresno. Yeah, it is Central. They're, well, whatever. Back in California. Fresno, California at the Save Mart Center.
One of the
favorite. I actually stayed in a motel across from the Save Mart Center when I was working out there years ago.
I stayed at the Holiday Inn Express out there to see one of my favorite bands of all time and one of my all-time favorite shows.
AFI?
AFI.
That's right.
Those who don't know me, I have a nice AFI tattoo on my left arm. Black Sails in the Sunset, one of the greatest albums on earth.
He's lying. It's a picture of Davey Havoc sucking his penis.
I engorged myself larger than it should be. But by the way, both Robert and I use blue microphones. Also, the exclusive microphones used by AFI. AFI also use blue microphones.
No, we were trying to push the show here, man. But whatever.
Am I rambling on again? Cub Swanson versus Brian Ortega. This fight has got me
this
torn.
This is a great fight. This is a great piece
this
of matchmaking for
got
the UFC.
Me torn. This is Sean Shelby at his finest right now. No, Sean Shelby doesn't do the 45ers.
No, he moved up, and this is McMaynard.
This is Maynard at the 45ers.
This is McMaynard. And he's put number 4 Cub Swanson against number 6 Brian Ortega, and this is perfect piece of matchmaking. And I'm actually really glad they didn't pull Cub for the title fight because I wanted to see this fight.
We can talk about the WEC days until the fucking cows come home. I fell in love with Cub Swanson's fighting style and his heart back in the WEC days. He is one of the pioneers of MMA. He's one of the pioneers of mixed martial arts striking. If you look at his boxing capabilities, his kickboxing capabilities, he's got some of the most well-rounded distance management. He's got a great jab. He's got good combinations. He enters from multiple angles. And him training now with TJ Dillashaw and Bang Muay Thai, I think we're going to see a striking from Cub Swanson that we've never seen before. Last time Ortega fought, I spoke his praise. I called him one of the next up-and-comers, one of the guys to potentially be a challenger for the belt in the next couple of years. Well, how do you test his capabilities?
Well, put him against Cub. That's what they did with Max Holloway. They put him against Cub to see if he could break through that ceiling. And
he did.
And Cub's striking is how he wins this fight. Because for all of this talk and all this vauntness of Cub Swanson being a jiu-jitsu black belt, he in MMA, he's not that good.
There's levels to this shit, bro.
In jiu-jitsu. He really is not. Ricardo Lamas got him in an easy arm triangle, head and arm triangle. Max Holloway took his back and got the rear naked choke. Frankie Edgar did it, which, I mean, none of those are losses to be ashamed of.
Frankie Edgar broke his jaw from striking, and then he did the jaw crank.
But I mean, Cub Swanson, I mean, he left his head in there for a guillotine from Jens Pulver
from Pulver. I know
That was a dumb mistake though, and that was before Pulver fell off. I mean, but for all the talk about him being a jiu-jitsu black belt, he has nothing for Brian Ortega on the ground.
Nobody at 45 has anything for Ortega on the ground. Nobody at 35, 25, 55, or 75, save maybe one person. 70. Sorry, I started thinking about 70.
Damian Maia.
Save one person at 70.
Okay.
Nobody, Brian Ortega, T-City, Triangle City. This motherfucker is one of the best jiu-jitsu practitioners in all of MMA right now. And his last fight, his striking was what won him the fight, showing his way to his entries and getting where he needed to be. I was so high on Ortega. I still am. But now I'm seeing him fight one of my top three all-time favorite fighters in Cub Swanson. Where does my...
So who are you picking? This is the part where we
pick.
This is the part
I know.
Pick. You
that's why I'm
fence,
delaying
right?
these
this
things.
Is, this isn't a dick. No straddling allowed.
Well, that's what you do. That's your
you
job.
You can't straddle
to ride
it, man. You
things.
Can't straddle it. You have to
Jason
make a. You have to
Knight
make a choice. No. We ain't skipping. You have to make a choice.
What happened?
You have to make a choice. We ain't skipping.
Whoa! I thought I did. I already say it.
Who'd you pick?
I didn't already say.
No.
Play it back again.
Are you sure?
Listen to it tomorrow, and then maybe. I'm
going
to pick Cub Swanson.
Very well. All right. I think Cub Swanson's about to be a gatekeeper again.
I know that, and I'm just... look.
And I think that gate's about to get kicked down by Brian Ortega.
I think Brian Ortega is going to get inside on Cub Swanson and take him down, and when that happens, it's game over.
Yeah, I think the gate gets kicked down. I think Brian Ortega announces him as the top contender. Featherweight action co-main event. We got Jason Knight and Gabriel Benitez.
But styles make fights, man. Ortega's not ready to fight Holloway.
No, I mean, he's announcing himself as a contender, not the contender. So, I mean, maybe his next fight would be against Ricardo Lamas, man, who just lost his fight with Jose Aldo, his rematch.
I just
want
to have a beer with Cub. That's all.
I would, too. He seems like a cool guy.
He's not a cool
guy. I did meet him at the UFC Expo, and he is a pretty nice guy. So, Jason Knight, Gabriel Benitez in the co-main event. And
that's an easy
this
pick.
This is basically, to me, being set up as a rebound fight for Jason Knight after his absolute thrashing at the hands of Ricardo Lamas.
Yeah. Thrashing is an understatement, man. Jason Knight was on such a run.
He was.
Such a high. And then Almeida, Almeida, who's now fought tonight at lightweight instead of featherweight, just dismantled. We'll find out whether or not he took his soul.
Yeah, Ricardo Lamas absolutely destroyed. He was supposed to fight Jose Aldo in 2 weeks.
Oh, Ricardo Lamas.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, you're thinking Charles
I thought you
Oliveira,
said Charles Oliveira
Felder.
For some
no,
reason.
No, sorry. Yeah, Ricardo Lamas, took basically beat the brakes off of him in the first round, and this fight is basically Jason Knight. It's a Jason Knight rebound fight. They're giving it to him.
You know,
the
UFC needs to do more of these. When you've got a guy who knows a great fight and they get
quote
stifled by
squash
somebody,
matches.
Yeah,
yeah, to help build them up.
Yeah, and it's a good thing because Jason Knight is a marketable guy. He's a sellable guy. He's a fun fighter. Let's give him a winnable fight and make him look good. Let's use this. Give him a highlight reel, and let's start selling him. And so I'm on game, and Jason Knight should win that fight within 2 rounds.
Jason Knight submits him, I believe.
2 rounds.
Yeah.
Within 2 rounds.
In bantamweight action, at least MMA and the Max favorite, at least in my mind, Robert Taylor favorite, Marlon Moraes from World Series of Fighting.
We're in agreement on this one, brother. I told you I was excited to see the fight.
Stepping in on short notice to take on Aljamain Sterling, who was supposed to be taking on Hani Yahya. And I think Marlon Moraes is about to go get his second fight in a row, his second win in a row in the UFC. And I think he absolutely embarrasses Aljamain Sterling.
Look, this is, like, I told you I was excited to see this fight again. Like, I'm like, dude, I want to see this fight on the ground. Like, these two guys, their jiu-jitsu, their wrestling, their positions, their sweeps, their counters. Dude, like, that's a grappler's dream to watch these two guys, because Sterling creates scrambles and he wins his scrambles. He's phenomenal with his jiu-jitsu. His striking is okay. Moraes' striking is better, by far.
By far.
By far.
By far.
But their ground game is a fun, because you got Moraes.
Their ground game is
a
wash, so at that point you take it into account. You take into account who's got the better striking.
I don't think it's a wash. I think ground game Moraes is better in top position, and I think Sterling is willing to give up his back. Or not give up and be on his back. Willing to give up guard. I think Sterling's willing to give up guard.
He did catch that arm triangle on Mizugaki from the bottom.
From the bottom.
Which was sick.
Because he creates scrambles. He has awkward sweeps. He has awkward positioning. He does a great job from his bottom. He's willing to give it up.
He hasn't looked the same from that run ever since he had that contract dispute and he sat out for a while.
Yeah, it was after the whole Caraway
fight. And then
he came back and
took the Caraway fight and
won the
first round
fight.
And then lost the next two.
And got out-wrestled. Mm-hmm. Got out-wrestled by Caraway, who is a great wrestler. But yeah, long story short, I wanted to see Moraes fight who he called out in his last fight.
Jimmy Rivera.
That should have been the fight. Now look, him versus Sterling, good fight. I pick him to win via decision. It's not going to be a barn burner, but he's going to win by an obvious decision, 30-27.
I think the reason he stepped in to take this fight is because Jimmy Rivera, I think the UFC told him, no, we're going to set Jimmy Rivera up with John Lineker, who is replacing Dominic Cruz to fight on the December 30th
show. Ranking-wise, it makes more sense.
It's a great fight.
I'm excited about that fight, too.
I still really wanted to see Rivera versus Marlon Moraes. That would have been amazing.
Is it? What is it about us? I'm going to get a little philosophical.
That go for the people outside of the UFC?
Right.
Because we recognize the talent. And in my mind, Marlon Moraes should be 2-0 in the UFC.
I agree with you.
He hasn't looked his greatest, but sure. John Dodson is just quicker than most people at bantamweight because he is a flyweight moving up.
Sure.
Rafael Sanchao is a top-ranked bantamweight, so losing to him by split decision, even though you know most people thought you won.
You know what, man?
Sunsao
tends to be on the better side of split decisions because TJ Dillashaw beat him.
It was close.
TJ beat him.
It was close.
With the takedowns?
I could see it, though.
He didn't do
close.
Anything with the
close.
Takedowns.
I could see it.
The takedowns were the only significant points.
I scored it for TJ.
I scored it for TJ. That was before.
But I could see it.
I wasn't a full-on dick rider then. I was definitely in line to ride TJ's penis, but I thought he beat him then, too.
That's just what a Sunsao does.
Sunsao's a great fighter, don't get me wrong, but he's not going to hold the belt as long as he's got people like TJ Dillashaw, Cody Garbrandt, Marlon Moraes in his division.
No, that's true. That's a great point. And also in that division, speaking of Brian Caraway, he was originally expected to fight Luke Sanders at this event.
Yep.
Pulled out, because that's what Caraway apparently does nowadays.
Well, that's why your girlfriend / his ex-girlfriend are no longer together. You're pulling out too much. She wants to be. No,
Luke Sanders, I like to call Mr. Becky Lynch. Anybody that knows wrestling knows who that girl is. And Jesus, what a lucky guy. Seriously,
him,
what a lucky
huh?
guy. That Irish girl is so hot. If you're listening to this, babe. Sorry, but you already know.
you've been foretold.
And you actually agree with me.
She's so, like, well, if but, I was going to be a
yeah,
girl
Luke
lover.
Sanders is fighting this card. I expect him to roll through Andre Sukhatov. I just wanted to bring that up just so I can talk shit about Brian Caraway pulling out again.
Dude, he hasn't fought in a long time. Yet
he hasn't fought since
the
Aljamain Sterling win.
That's like 2 years ago.
Yeah, at least.
It doesn't make sense. I was excited to see him fight again because I enjoy a great...
If he got injured, that's okay. Sorry, man.
But why do you pull out?
But you keep pulling out. It's undisclosed reasons. That means you're bitching out. That means your vagina's hurt.
Oh, hold on. How did he break his orbital in training?
Yeah, right. I don't get it. I mean, I don't expect him to see him fight again.
So you got Sanders in this fight?
Oh, easily.
Second round TKO?
No, Sukhumtas is tough. I think he goes to decision.
Okay, I'll take that. At a bantamweight, that makes sense.
But I just wanted to point that out real quick just to talk crap about Brian Caraway for a second. But the other fight, one of the fights we have to preview on this show, it's a must. MMA to the Max's very own special guest at one point, Eric Anders, former LFA middleweight champion, taking on Marcus Perez. Your boy, Eric Anders, taking on Marcus Perez, who won the LFA middleweight championship that was vacated by Eric Anders.
Yep.
And so this is a fight that could have happened in the Legacy Fighting Alliance. It's happening in the UFC on the main card. I'm so glad that Eric Anders is getting main card love here on this Fox show.
You got 8-0 versus 9-0, but who's the favorite to win this fight?
Eric Anders. Should absolutely
should
be
he
the
be.
Favors.
Not just as a guest
favorite.
Of our show.
Absolutely should
a
be.
A guy who I had great rapport with, a former you know, football player such as myself, was his former football player. You know, we had our bonding.
Apparently you don't remember that. They own y'all. You know that, right?
Only because he was a guest on my program. Did I let that slide? And Stone, when
we're
you listen to this.
We're going
to
get him on here again.
Stone, when you listen to this, you know
we'll get him on here after he knocks out Marcus Perez.
Second round TKO.
I was thinking second round. I think Eric Anders, while not quite championship ready level, I think that man could get there easily.
Again, I go back to the athlete thing, right?
He's an elite athlete.
He is the guy when you played football and they tossed him the ball and he ran through everybody in Pop Warner. You didn't understand how or why. There are elite athletes out there. I was talking to my 13-year-old about this, about LeBron James. Like, look, you're never going to be LeBron James. You're a good basketball player, but what's going to make you better? You don't have that elite athleteness. So you gotta learn how to shoot with your left and right hand. You gotta learn how to, you know, go left. You gotta learn to be better, right?
Yeah.
Eric Anders never had to learn how to be better. He just was. And as we talked about from his previous fight and his last fight, the leaps and bounds in his striking abilities. We all know his grappling.
Okay, sent Rafael Natal packing.
Yeah, I say we all know. Those of us who are hardcores and have watched Eric Anders and his grappling tournaments and the YouTube videos and everything there, we know what his grappling capabilities are. But his hands are improving by leaps and bounds. Every time. TKO, second round, easily.
Yeah, easily. And Eric Anders is going to, after he finishes the guy, he's easily looking at a top 15. They're not going to push him quickly into the top 10, but I can see a definitely top 15 opponent after that. And, hey, best of luck to you, Eric Anders. We're pulling for you, man.
Yeah, they're going to build him. They're going to build him right. I think they're going to build him right. He definitely has potential to be a great name.
This is a Saturday evening. We're recording after the pay-per-view, UFC 218. What are we doing tomorrow?
I think we got an interview with a very fun fighter.
Absolutely. In case anybody recently watched UFC Sydney, we are going to be talking to Fight of the Night winner. At least he was the winner of the fight that got Fight of the Night. He was ineligible for the bonus because he missed weight. Frank the Crank Camacho, he'll be joining us all the way from Guam, his home nation, and he'll be joining us at his time Monday morning 8 a.m., which will equate to Sunday afternoon 2 p.m. for us. We're going to be interviewing, talking to him about his career, his short, very short-lived stint on The Ultimate Fighter, where he lost a decision to Neil Magny.
That's not a decision to be too hard on yourself,
especially when you're a lightweight and you were fighting at welterweight at that time. Talk about his long road to the UFC, at least especially back to the UFC after that, and both of his fights in the UFC, which are barn burners and exciting fights. The man is just a highlight reel when it comes to excitement. So look for that. We'll be recording that tomorrow. Look for that to be released sometime midweek, so we can kind of space out these shows.
Frank the Crank, baby.
Frank the Crank Camacho on MMA to the Max. And on that note, Joe, let's get some social media out here, man.
You can get a hold of me at JoeHud45 on Twitter. Took me a second to remember where I was going. Twitter, JoeHud45. You can reach me there for questions, comments, criticisms, and me not giving a fuck what you have to say. Well, I don't. I mean, you can tell me I suck. Like,
I know. I already know. Just so frank about it.
Well, we're talking about Frank the Crank.
Oh,
let's be.
Nice play.
Look, this is how I do things, bro. I'm very subtle.
Nice play on words.
But yeah, JoeHud45 on Twitter. Or you can reach me at MMAToTheMaxJoe. And the two is always the number two on Instagram, MMAToTheMaxJoe. Robert, what you got?
Well, if you want to follow me on Twitter, that is at It's Rock Robster. No apostrophe, of course. They don't allow it. Find me on Instagram at MMA to the Max Rob. Yeah, we are very original like that. If you want to find the show on Facebook, find us at facebook.com/ MMA to the Max podcast. As always, as my co-host alluded to, the two is the number two because we still live in the 90s.
No, it's hip. No, it's hip. Yeah, MMA like, 2. And we would
like I said, we still live in the 90s. If you want to find any of our episodes, you can find us everywhere. Apple iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spreaker,
iHeartRadio.
Any form that you think of podcasts, you will find our show. And as always, find us on our parent website here, W2Mnet.com, where you can find any type of podcast or column on any sport or entertainment you can think of, that is movies, pro wrestling, amateur wrestling, football, baseball, college football, basketball,
video games, soccer podcast movies, on there TVs. I've been getting into.
There is
the
soccer
podcast
well.
Is actually really fucking good.
Yeah, so check it out.
Listen
check
to it.
W2Mnet.com. You can find anything you need there. Please
One
visit.
Stop.
Give us
Place
the
seats. Shop.
Give us the hits. Yeah, your one-stop shop for all your sports and entertainment needs, right?
I think so.
That's a good point.
And I just want to put this out there. Next year, Robert and I will be participating in the iHeartRadio Music Festival. We're in negotiations right now to talk to them about what it is that we need to do as a part of the iHeartRadio media team. But we're working on it, so stay tuned.
Yeah. We're gonna get there. Speaking of next year as well, besides that, check it out. UFC.com/pick'em. We have a pick'em league. We've been doing it for a couple years now. We are opening it up to everybody.
Who's the winner tonight?
Oh, the winner of that was me. I was actually going to forego that because, you know, it happens so often.
No. We got to be fair to all the winners out there.
We do, but I am the host. I was actually not going to bring it up. But we do the Pick'em League every year. Everybody, if you want to join, next year is going to be $20. We usually do $50, but we're going to drop it down to $20 so everybody can join. Payment is due before the first event. If you don't get in, you don't join. It is a first, second, and third placement at the end of the year. Just whoever has the most points, first, second, and third. I will be posting the link everywhere on the page in groups. If you want to join, let me know. Payment will be given through PayPal. And we have a giveaway coming up.
We do. We met our 500.
We actually
followers. We blew past that recently. Yeah, on our Facebook
followers. Jumped up. It was like 200 likes out of nowhere on our Facebook page. So because of that, we are giving away an Amazon Echo Dot.
Boom,
boom. You like that? That is a $50 value given away for free. We will ship it to you.
Echo.
We will ship it to you for absolutely free. All you have to do is enter.
How do you enter?
Well, obviously, like the page.
On the post
where I say, hey, this is how you enter, comment, say you want to enter. If you don't do that, you don't join.
That's right. So, you're liking a comment.
Liking a comment. That's all you got to do. Just say, I want in. I will put your name. We will draw your name. If your name comes up, you are the winner. We will ship it to you for free. I will get a hold of you. I will get your address. It's all on me. So
it literally is all on Robert.
So that's how we're going to do it. But, hey, just stay tuned for that. We will also give more details out on it tomorrow when we interview Frank the Crank Camacho. Look for it on the page. On that note, you got anything else, Joe?
I have got nothing else, my friend.
For my co-host Joe Hudson, I am Robert Taylor. This is MMA to the Max. We will see you next week. Take care.